Hello, and you're listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, Rear Window, a 1954 film directed by Alfred Hitchcock. This isn't our first Hitchcock, right? We've done Hitchcock before.
I think we've done, I picked one that was a later one.
It was like his last one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the one with Bruce Dern.
Yeah. No,
was
it, and they
it
were
wasn't
two.
Frenzy, it was the other one.
Oh, the other one. I watched Frenzy alone.
Mm-hmm. That was fun. This is
it. Did family plot?
Family plot.
It didn't work out as well.
Mm.
It wasn't very good.
Yeah. Well, a through line is like for all these movies that the husband's always telling the wife character to shut up. He's so much a Bruce Dern just telling his wife, shut up. And in this one as well. But wow, I forgot how much of this isn't completely interested in being a thriller. It's much more. It's much more encompassing than that. There's a lot more going on.
All these movies are like that.
Yeah, but this one, it's a discussion on marriage and commitment and our willingness to change for each other to make things work.
I mean, this one more specifically and explicitly, but I feel like all his movies are just the excuse is, oh, there's a murder or there's like something, and then it explores something else or like something deeper. Yeah.
Well, how does the whole marriage I guess plot line or theme tie into the voyeurism stuff? That's kind of what I'm trying to figure out at the moment. How does he marry the two? Or does he even need to? Because what is he trying to say about the voyeurism? This idea that here's a guy who is so invested in, he basically kind of turned to the voyeurism to kind of distance himself, to distract himself from like dealing with his commitment towards her, right? That's all he got. He kind of got in really into it in the first place, that and being bedridden. But she too gets into it and watching things and, It's a movie about, are you potentially maybe getting bored of your partner or to the point that you want to murder them? Like, you see different extremes of that, right? One, the husband marries the...
But it could be about, like, the effect that, like, movie relationships has on actual relationships. Because it's like, he is a movie viewer. He is sat in a seat watching on a big screen. Mm-hmm. All of these little stories. He's like essentially like channel surfing.
Yeah.
For like each different one. Mm-hmm. And then like what he's seeing and then what he's experiencing is like a disc, I don't know.
They almost like lampshade that by going like, oh, it's like, aren't you guys like, what? You guys are acting disappointed because it turns out this guy didn't kill his wife and you guys are acting a little glum about it. And that's because that's kind of what got them to do something together, right? They had different interests. She does fashion. He does... Yeah. Journalism. The reason why he didn't think it was going to work out is because he doesn't think they're compatible. But through this, this fascination with murder,
I thought like, I mean, if you just like analyze it from a classic perspective of this character and he has to overcome something and that thing, he's always in motion, right? He's always in motion, and then he's like stopped in his tracks, and he can't stop. So he has to learn the lesson of like, oh, you can also have fun while you're, you know, not in Pakistan or whatever he was like saying. And she had to learn a lesson of like, there's more to see. There's like a deeper side of things, I guess. There's adventure to be had, and just don't get like stuck in the routine of just entertainment, I think.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I saw it.
Well, she does fashion. Mm-hmm. She's always talking about how to do this drink, how to showing this thing. Like, so packed, so many different things that's centered around.
I had another thought about what I said. Because he's literally, like, when you're watching something, you're just a viewer watching it. But then, for him, when he comes into the apartment, he's literally thrown out of the fourth wall.
Oh, out of the stage. That's so, that's so awesome. Also, the thing that I noticed about you talking about them like little individual little movies, I thought they felt like silent films because the distance, right? And because of that distance, you are encouraged to put on your own interpretation, which is what he was doing in the first place.
Yeah.
He saw that, he's like, oh, murder. Mm. And in this case, he turned out to be right, but I think it's all saying the fact that we always want to do that. We see someone's voice, we watch someone's life through our binoculars, we want to project. And what is he projecting? Like, boredom like with your partner?
Unhappiness and monogamy.
It's like, oh, yeah, those, shut the wife up and he this guy did it for real. Yeah, it's fascinating. It also makes me sad that most thrillers don't even bother to try to operate on this level of, like, no, it can be about something. It doesn't just have to be murder, sleaze, and I don't know, suspense.
I like, well, I think what happens is there's a lack of suspense, like set pieces or whatever, you know? Like, I feel like this one had, like, when she's in the apartment and he's almost coming back and she has to sneak out, all those... I think it's lacking. You don't see that a lot.
No.
It's like either just like...
Also hard to do, I guess. Because he is the master of suspense. Yeah. It's so cool to see how he can switch into that mood. So immediately, you're like, oh, wow, this is an Alfred Hitchcock movie when he's... Yeah. And it finally dawns on you why everything's... Well, not it's like a realization, but everything's... You see everything, the entire apartment, almost like a diorama.
Yeah.
And that's played up for... comedy, for for revealing exposition, to revealing suspense, you know, he's on the other side of the door, she's happily waving at them, she does oblivious. Grace Kelly's so cute in this.
Well, all that stuff is cute and nice, but that's what takes me out of it, like, mm-hmm. that's a personal preference. That's why I'm like, I like Brian De Palma, mm-hmm. I like Polanski because of that, because it feels like an updated version of that. Like, when you see movies that mm-hmm. use those same techniques, but not in that context of, like, you know, the bright colors and mm-hmm. the, you know, not silly, but, like, I don't know. You know that classic sort of thing.
The backdraw.
Like, I think Tarantino says something to that effect. Like, he's kind of ruined by the time he was making movies. And, like, if this guy was operating... like
at this level
in the 70s, for example, my god, those movies would be awesome. It'd be like, you know,
they'd just be Brian De Palma movies.
Yeah, I guess. yeah
but even then, like, well, it's hard, I think, with especially with these directors, since you can realize it's, you know, it's, you're a master, but it's hard to stay a master forever, right? De Palma's mm-hmm. later films were a bit lacking. Same with
same here
with Hitchcock. Yeah. Like, you kind of run out of steam at one mm-hmm. point as an artist, but that's okay. I think it's okay.
But is it more that the times change and you can't adapt?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. I think you're used to a certain set of, like, this is what a movie is, and then when that changes, because it's all ultimately always reactionary.
Yeah.
Unless you're someone like Spielberg, who basically invented the blockbuster, so he gets to heal.
No, but his movies are all terrible now, right?
Yeah, like, they're not really...
Yeah.
Unless they're, like, kid blockbusters, like the BFG kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're, like, Oscar bait stuff.
Right. Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
The Post. I've seen all of those.
The Post is not good.
It's all right. It's not, you know, it's...
It's not gonna change your life.
Well, yeah,
it's not gonna change your life. That's right.
Yeah, he's not like making, like, you know, Skinema Rink or whatever.
No,
he's not pushing boundaries. He's just doing what he's always done.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's what I think. But I think if he had started in like late '60s, '70s,
mm-hmm.
the movies could be much darker, and they could like explore even like more cynical themes, end in more cynical ways. That would have been awesome.
Yeah. I think his mm-hmm. darkest film is Munich?
No, I'm talking about Hitchcock.
Spielberg. If he got into that sleaze, Well, not the sleaze, but the darkness of like the
scene. You make a good point. Maybe it's just preference. Like, Spielberg was working around that time, and his mm-hmm. preference was to make something like, you know, Indiana Jones. And
Hitchcock's been making movies since the 40s, right? He's had that entire, films
technically like the 20s, I think.
Mm.
20s.
The medium has changed so much during just those, like, that time. Well, I guess Scorsese remains like the only director who's consistent, who's like in his who's operating at his age and still
making very
very
good
movies.
Know what his new movie's gonna be like. And The Irishman wasn't that
good.
I liked it.
I liked it, but it was like one of those, like, when a band makes an album and it's just the songs from one of the old hit
mm-hmm.
albums, and it's like, wow, why are you gonna do this?
We've seen this before. Like, it was either retire or just don't do it again, or do
something
new.
So weird. I don't mind that.
Well, we need to talk more about the movie. Do you have any more to add?
I mean, in my presentation I did on this, I brought up the fact of, like, Cold War anxiety, like government encouraging you to like spy on neighbors,
right?
Kind of stuff. Or do you think that applies?
Well, there is that scene when like the girls, when outside a woman's dog is killed, and she starts yelling like, "You guys don't care. The neighbors are supposed to like be careful,
yeah,
look out for each
very,
other."
Like,
and what we've done is like we've locked ourselves in, and we just kind of want, and we're just paranoid about everybody else. You know, like, I can see that it can be like a parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, what brings them together? Music. I like that, or art, and
yeah.
or appreciation
mm-hmm.
for beauty. And
that's
yeah.
true.
All right. Shall we? If we have nothing else, should we take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we're back. Step right up. 7 reels. Let's rate them up.
6.5.
6.5. Nothing's
seven.
Perfect.
7.
I think this is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, and it makes me sad that we don't aspire to that level of quality. Even for a thriller, even if it's genre fair, you could make it good. You could make it mean something.
Well, this is like arguably a slower burn compared to like...
A lot of talking.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, where everything's just action.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
I like the limitation. Like the protagonist is literally confined to a wheelchair. He literally can't do anything.
They could really recreate this as like a COVID movie. They kind of did in Kimmy.
Kind of.
That's a good parallel.
What's Kimmy?
Steven Soderbergh.
The Soderbergh one.
He made a movie like Rear Window.
Not kind of. But he made a thriller, a techno thriller.
What?
Yeah. It came out like last...
Is it good?
I thought you saw it.
No.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's fun. It's very fun.
Yeah, I would rewatch it.
She usually doesn't like him, but
yeah.
she liked that one.
And
yeah.
I
okay,
liked
I'll
it.
I'll watch it.
Yeah.
The last one I watched was that awful one with the heist and Benicio del Toro.
Oh, was that not good?
Well, I watched 10 minutes and decided
it
wasn't.
Yeah, we stopped watching it.
No,
then
I think I finished it.
And then,
because
we started arguing because she wasn't enjoying it, and I just never went back to it. And then she went back and watched it.
Well, good for you. I believe like in watching the whole thing and then being
mm-hmm.
like, it's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
It is. Although I loved that basketball.
So good, High Flying Bird. It was.
Yeah.
I loved it so much. It got me to care about basketball. So,
yeah.
like, what other movie? No other movie has done that.
Michael Jordan doc. That's great.
I'm the last.
Mm-hmm.
Wait,
The Last Dance.
Is it on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to kind of watch it now.
It's amazing.
Alright, well that brings us to what have we been watching this week. What have we been watching this week?
Well, you'll watch that Spider-Verse movie.
Yeah, I guess we should need to briefly talk about it.
Garbage.
It was
alright. It was
fun.
Until I learned today that apparently Phil Lord is terrible at... treating the artist because he'll do extensive rewrites even though they've already finished it. Like he'll go back and pushing the artist to like basically have an incredibly like tight turnover. Like he's just terrible.
That's why they ran out of money.
Which kind of indicates that the movie was never intended to be like a trilogy.
But
I think
it was boring. Like I wasn't invested. The plot was all over the place, building up to something that doesn't exist yet because they haven't made the next movie.
It was way too long.
I agree with that. It was too long, too big. It should have just been like just one movie.
Yeah, because the villain basically disappeared. He's just like, oh yeah, he's gone now. He'll come back in the next movie. You're like, wait, you spent all this time setting him up, and it's a cool idea.
But they immediately like set him up as like, oh, I'm just a small little villain. You're gonna kill immediately. And then it's like the big villain, and it's like...
I like that, though.
Yeah,
but it wasn't... I didn't think he was that interesting.
I thought it was
a very uninteresting villain.
They didn't put enough effort into...
Well, you say what you will, but Jason Schwartzman is having a good year.
Yeah. If that's an Asteroid City, he's like... He's always cool. He's a great actor. But I liked it. I think the animation, I think the technical mastery of it kind of just overwhelmed everything, like whatever.
Yeah, but it was too much. At the end of it, I was like, thank God this is over, which is not a feeling I want to have.
And there you can feel everybody in the theater getting antsy because the movie threatened to end like 4 times in a row.
People were having full-on conversations.
Yeah. Well, you know who wasn't having full-on conversations? The audience at the Raging Bull screen.
Yeah?
They loved it. It was amazing.
I'm glad.
And everything, all the domestic abuse, the verbal thing was
funny.
For it killed.
Yeah, it was so funny. Like things where he'd be like, you know, hurry up with my coffee, and then she'd say something and be like, yeah, no, shut up, get in there. And the people were dying laughing. It'd be like, that's so funny that that existed. But it still exists. And
it's still
but it's so odd to see it, like, alone. You see these things, and it's like, oh, it's heartbreaking and rough to watch. With an audience, it's hilarious.
It plays completely different.
Yeah, it was a real lesson in, like, how a movie can be changed by seeing it in theaters. And it made me want to, like, okay, yeah, keep the theaters around.
Yeah.
I don't want to, like, just watch things.
If it's a good crowd and it's a good movie and everything, you can feel it, this mutual participation in the narrative.
Yeah. And I thought it was going to be, like, oh, me and a couple of film hipsters. But I went in and the guy was like, it starts at 7:30, you should get your seats. And I was like, dude, it's 7, what are you talking about? He's like, it's going to get packed. And I was like, this guy's just being ridiculous. And I was like, okay, I'll check it out. Walked in, it was already half full.
Oh shit.
So I found a seat quickly that I liked, and then it got like super packed.
And young kids? Like,
yeah,
that's,
a lot of teenagers.
And that's really cool. I'm really happy that a bunch of teenagers are willing to go into, like, let's go see this. And
yeah, it was awesome.
That's good.
But they're weird teenagers, you know what I mean?
They're like, oh,
like
house.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's just of course.
They're
like,
not like just, you know, classic teenagers.
No, it's like
they're like film nerds.
They're going to go the classic ones, go see the Fast movies.
Yeah, or the Amazing Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse.
Shall we move on?
We should move on. We saw Blackberry. Matt Johnson's Blackberry. Really liked it.
Yeah.
If you liked Ear, you will like this. Like, it's
it
basically plays like similar.
I'll watch it at home.
But it's more akin to The Social Network.
Distillery District on the outdoor theater.
What's that?
They look a big screen where you just watch it outside.
Oh, you have to pay?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just, like, eavesdrop.
Eavesdrop people through the movie. What else? Have we seen anything else?
No.
Let's move on. All right. What are recommendations? You see?
I have one. Disturbia.
God damn it.
Yes. The first time I had, like, an actual recommendation loaded. Yeah, it's the same movie, but with Shia LaBeouf. And
they're teenagers.
Yeah, and they're teenagers, and it's so much fun from what I remember.
I need to revisit it, because I loved it. I genuinely loved
so
that movie as a kid.
I'm worried that it won't hold up, but there was a lot of cool...
The setup is so cool, because he, like, punched a teacher, because the teacher made fun of his dead dad.
Yeah.
And now he's under house arrest, and that's the setup, instead of broken leg. And he's like,
oh.
And it's a cute girl who comes, and it's like, oh, you're watching him too? And then they watch together.
And he has a funny...
Asian friend. Oh.
So good.
Representation, that's how it's done.
Yeah, that's how you do it.
I have I'm trying to think of a watching movie.
You can say Kimmy.
No, you can say Kimmy. I'm gonna say Kimmy. Francis Ford Coppola's The Conversationalist.
Oh,
have you seen that?
Yes, I have. Oh my god, why do you keep asking that? Have you seen? Of course
I thought we started watching it and then we turned it off.
No, I watched it by myself.
Sure.
I think we watched it too when we lived together.
Oh yeah, it's a hard start to get through, but then I think the movie is fascinating. It's also a movie about paranoia. Who's listening to who? Who's watching? Like, I recommend that. What would you recommend, Michelle? Rope.
It's also in one.
So sick. And it's one shot. Well, they cheated a couple times, but it's done very well. Okay. Well, let's move on to what we will be watching next week, Yusuf. It's your turn to pick.
We'll be watching Hal Ashby's The Last Detail.
Why?
Mm-hmm. I've been on a Jack Nicholson kick lately, and so
he's
I've just
so
been
cool.
Watching because I'm reading The Big Goodbye, the movie about the book about making Chinatown.
Yeah,
and just he's kind of awesome. Like he's really, really cool. Like they portray him like I guess the author did his research, and he's really vain, but he's also like sort of I don't know a very fun character. Like he really likes existentialism and
seems a sort.
Yeah, and like modern art and stuff, and he was like such a cool character that I was like, whoa, I want to watch more of his movies. And apparently he was like, his plan was I want to be a writer director, but that didn't work out, and he kind of knew what you know where his talents lied, and he really took the process like seriously, like, oh, I'm an actor. And
he's a really good actor.
Yeah,
one of the best.
Did you see that him at that basketball game and yeah. he didn't know who Larry David is?
No.
Apparently Larry David's like, he just didn't like really, like, he didn't know. Yeah, he's like, well, I guess he doesn't know.
Who is Larry David?
Exactly.
He's the co-creator of Seinfeld.
Oh.
He has his own show, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. I saw a guy at Value Village today. This doesn't need to be on the podcast, but he had a Curb Your Enthusiasm hat. And then he found a Patagonia hat at the Value Village. And I was like, what? You have two gray hats. Just leave one of them.
For me, just give you either one. Either one. Just.
I'm so mad.
Why does he get all the cool merch? All right, so we'll be watching that.
Yeah.
And so keep it real. I don't have a. I don't know what the movie's about, so I don't have a pun to like really like link it to the end of it.
Listen to the last detail.
Listen to the last detail.
Of the podcast.
Oh. Exactly what she said. All right, keep it right here, everybody. See you next week.
Bye. The Seventh Reel is hosted by Arvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf El-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim, and our outro music is composed by Yahya El-Bashir. Thanks for listening.